On one level, I entirely understand why so many organizations and institutions have rules. Imagine what it would be like driving on the 401 if there were no rules, if there were no lanes, if it didn't matter how you moved your car from left to right, if it didn't matter what speed you went at. I very much understand how rules bring order. They preserve safety. Rules can be a very good thing. The reason we have governments in large measure is so that they can set up policies that will protect people, that will assist people, that will eliminate or limit the intrusion of tyranny or abuse. It is for good reason that we have governments and the policies they develop. But on another level, I have been in contexts where I have found the rules to be excessive. Places where I found the rules to be a bit much, a bit overboard. I have memories of my first year at boarding school being reprimanded at the dinner table by my housemaster because when I was buttering my bun, I lifted my bun ever so slightly off the plate and began to apply the butter. Now, apparently, that's a bad thing, and at my boarding school, it was against the rules to raise your bread off the plate. Well, I still find that excessive. I was last night at someone's place for dinner, and I was lifting up my bun and buttering it, just like I think many of you do. Some rules are a bit excessive. I remember at the same boarding school, your socks in the warm weather had to go up to a certain height, almost to cover the bottom of your knee. For the boys, your hair could only be so long, and they actually had a way of measuring whether your hair was too long. Yes, some rules can be excessive. Maybe some of you belong to golf courses that have these very strict rules that you can't wear an article of clothing that has a logo on it, or a brand name, or a golf course that doesn't allow you to carry or use a cellular telephone. Yes, some rules are excessive. That's my experience with rules. I want you to think about your own experience with rules. Have you ever found yourself in a place where the rules and regulations and policies were a bit excessive? Is that your workplace? Is that your social club? Is that your sports team? Is that in your own home? Is that in your own church? Where have you found yourself in a place where the rules, the regulations were a bit much? Did you know as Jesus traveled from place to place, he was regularly scrutinized for how he followed rules? A religious group known as the Pharisees often followed Jesus around with the express intent to determine if he was following closely enough their religious rules. Sometimes, I don't think it's an understatement to say that sometimes these rules or these systems of the Pharisees were a bit excessive. Sometimes they just misunderstood the meaning of the Hebrew Scriptures. On other occasions, they misapplied the law that had been given to them. In short, the Pharisees were well known for what they avoided. The Pharisees were well known for what they refrained from. The Pharisees were marked out from the rest by what they did not do. Now, you may or may not know that Jesus did not interpret the rules in the same way that the religious leaders did in his day. And it's not that Jesus was dismissive of the rules. It's not as if Jesus was trying to be rebellious. It's just that from his perspective, the rules were being misinterpreted. The rules were being misapplied. And this dynamic shows up very clearly in the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 12. And let's read that now, verses 1 to 14. Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath. His disciples were hungry and began to pick some heads of grain and eat them. When the Pharisees saw this, they said to Jesus, "Look, Your disciples are doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath. He answered, Haven't you read what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He entered the house of God, and he and his companions ate the consecrated bread, which was not lawful for them to do, but only for the priests. Or haven't you read in the law that on the Sabbath the priests in the temple desecrate the day, and yet are innocent? I tell you that one greater than the temple is here. If you had known what these words mean, I desire mercy, not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the innocent. For the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. Going on from that place, he went into their synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, they asked him, Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? Jesus said to them, If any of you has a sheep, and it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will you not take hold of it and lift it out? How much more valuable is a man than a sheep? Therefore, it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. Then Jesus said to the man, Stretch out your hand. So he stretched it out, and it was completely restored, just as sound as the other. But the Pharisees went out and plotted how they might kill Jesus. I don't know about you, but as I read that account, as I think about and observe the reaction of the Pharisees to Jesus' disciples eating heads of grain on the Sabbath, a particular schoolyard phrase comes to my mind. Tattletale. Tattletale. The Pharisees show up and they say, Look, your disciples are breaking the rules. They're picking heads of grain on the Sabbath. Yes, the tattletale has a mentality that typically manifests itself with a I'm better than you kind of attitude. Tattletales often view themselves as being a kind of moral police. And I think this is a fitting description for the Pharisees in Jesus' day. Against these accusations of the Pharisees, you may have noted, Jesus defends himself. Jesus maintains his innocence and the innocence of his disciples. In fact, Jesus gives an elaborate defense. It's a three-pronged defense. First of all, Jesus says to the accusers, to the Pharisees, there is precedence for exceptions. Now, I wish it was the case when we get a ticket for some traffic infraction that these same principles were applied. They're often not. But in Jesus' day, in Jesus' understanding of the law, there is precedence for exceptions. The law is not hard and fast. It is not rigid. It is not without exceptions. And Jesus cites one. He cites David and his companions going into the temple, eating consecrated bread, which is technically against the law. And yet Jesus maintains their innocence. And he maintains his own innocence and the innocence of his disciples. So we learn there is precedence for exceptions. Now, I don't want us to all get too excited about that as we think about the commands of Scripture. We say, oh, Bryn says there's loopholes. Bryn says that it doesn't all apply to us. Well, let me get to this second point. Jesus uniquely qualifies as an exception. Jesus uniquely qualifies as an exception. And he does this by identifying himself. He says to the Pharisees, One who is greater than the temple is here. He goes on to say, I am the Lord of the Sabbath. So Jesus, it's not that he was saying he was above the law, but he was informing the Pharisees, he was letting them know that all of these laws that they tried to understand, interpret, and apply have their source or their origin in him. Jesus qualifies for the exception. And thirdly, the third line of defense that Jesus gives is he tells the Pharisees that they've lost sight of the intention of the law. as we think about the laws of the land and how they came about, there's always something that happens in history or something that's anticipated might happen. And so a law or a policy is created with a specific intention. And then perhaps many years pass, perhaps decades, perhaps a century, and the law is being applied, but sometimes we've lost why the law exists in the first place. Jesus explains, he tells the Pharisees, you don't understand why these laws are in place. That's Jesus' defense. Now, you're maybe sitting there thinking, okay, Bryn, that's great. You know, you're telling us about a little intramural debate between the Pharisees and Jesus. They get into a disagreement. Maybe it's semantics. Maybe Jesus is just helping these folks better understand the law. But what do we glean from this? What do I take with me home today? What do I take to work with me on Monday? What do I do with this text? I'll get to application in a few minutes, but I think there's a very important thing to note in this passage, because Jesus reveals himself in this passage. He makes claims for himself that are very important for us to know as followers of Jesus. It is a huge thing. It is a huge thing for Jesus to say that he's greater than the temple. That is not something we go around saying. That's not something the Pharisees would say. It's not something the Sadducees would say. It's not something a modern-day minister or pastor or priest would say. We would not say that we're greater than the institution that we're a part of. But that's precisely what Jesus does. He says someone bigger than the temple is here. It's also a huge thing for Jesus to say that he's Lord of the Sabbath. And the word Lord simply means master, meaning that the Sabbath, though very, very important, is subordinate to Jesus by his own claim. And so we can't relegate Jesus, as the world does, to being simply a good teacher, or just a prophet, or just a good, morally upright person. Jesus doesn't give us that option. He says, I'm bigger than the temple. I'm Lord of the Sabbath. And our options are threefold. Either he's crazy and he doesn't know what he's talking about, or he's lying and that those things aren't true, what he's saying, or indeed he is Lord. That Jesus is exactly who he claims to be. Jesus is essentially saying, I'm bigger than religion. Engaging me is more important than engaging these rules. And if these rules don't drive you to me, then you've missed the whole reason that the rules are there in the first point. Now, Jesus, his point is emphasized in his reference to Hosea 6, verse 6. And I'd love to know why Jesus doesn't give us the whole verse. Maybe it just, I'm sure it was on the tip of his tongue, but he only gives us the first half of Hosea chapter 6, verse 6. He says to the Pharisees that you don't understand the phrase, I desire mercy rather than sacrifice. In other words, Jesus is saying to them, I desire relationship more than I desire ritual. The second half of the verse, which you can look up in Hosea 6:6, is even more explicit in this regard. There, God says, I desire acknowledgement of me rather than burnt offerings. And that's an amazing thing, because you likely know that God commanded the burnt offerings. He commanded the rituals. The rituals have their origin in God and in his will. But he reminds us through the prophet Hosea, I'd rather have you acknowledge me. I'd rather have you acknowledge my place in your life than for you to bring me something on the altar. I'd rather you acknowledge me than write a big check and put it on the offering plate. I'd rather that you personally engage me than sign up for a committee or bake a casserole or volunteer to help out at your local congregation. God says in His Word, I want to engage you. I want a relationship with you. The rituals are important, yes, but don't bypass relationship to get to ritual. Because relationship is my preference. That's not my emphasis. That's Jesus' emphasis. Mercy over sacrifice. That's the emphasis of the Scripture, that God wants to be acknowledged as our supreme Lord and friend through Jesus Christ. He'd rather have relationship than religion. Maybe that's not new for you. Maybe you've been here for the previous six messages and you've signed on. You perfectly well understand that relationship comes first. And so maybe you've got a different question that you're bringing here this morning. And your question is, what do I do with this? Okay, Bryn, I get it. Relationship first. How do I apply that? Where is this religion thing going, or the relationship, where's the relationship thing going to take me? I think a partial answer is found in this text. Jesus says, it's lawful to do good on the Sabbath. It's lawful to do good on the Sabbath. And here's what I see unfolding. The religious leaders of the day were marked out by what they were against. The religious leaders of the day were marked out by what they did not do. While Jesus, on the other hand, is marked out by what He does do. While the Pharisees are saying, don't heal the man, don't pick the grain, don't do this, don't do that. Jesus wants to see people fed. He wants to see the sheep rescued. He wants the man's hand healed. Jesus is about doing good, while the Pharisees are about avoiding evil. And there's a big difference in that perspective. And I hear Jesus saying that as we prioritize relationship with Him, what will be elevated in us is the priority we assign to helping other people. Now, we may naturally have some inclination to be helpful, to assist others, but I hear in the text that as we draw close to Jesus, our capacity to do good will be increased. As we draw close in a relationship to the Lord, our ability to make a difference will grow and be enhanced. Relationship is first. But this is a relationship with overflow. This is a relationship that leads to something. The love of Jesus draws each of us in. And when the love of Jesus draws us in and we come close to Him in that relationship, that same love drives us out and gives us the inclination and the earnest desire to help others. Jesus draws us in not to keep us there, but His love draws us in and then sends us out. And the two are closely, closely connected. The closer I get to Jesus Christ, the more energized I am to help other people. That's been my experience. Now, wouldn't it be nice if we were marked out as a group of people, first as individuals, but also as a congregation? Wouldn't it be nice if St. Giles Kingsway were well known and regarded for what we were for, rather than what we were against. I was at a wedding recently, a family wedding, and as it sometimes happens, one member of my family approached me with a kind of theological question. It was really, he wanted to know my position on a particularly sensitive moral situation. And I've had enough conversations with this family member in the past to know what he was doing. He wanted to categorize me by what I was against. He figured that I would be against this thing that he asked the question about. And so by saying, yes, I am against that, he could place me even more, in a more definitive way, in this category of Bryn McPhail is against this. Christians are against this. The Church of Jesus Christ is against this. I said to that family member, I said, you know me, I'm a straight shooter. I'm not usually one to avoid hard questions. But I can't answer you. And it's not because I don't have a firm stance. It's because I don't want to be known. I don't want to be defined by what I'm against. I want to be known for what I'm for. And I'm for Jesus Christ. I'm for growing in His likeness. I'm for having my life transformed by Him. I'm for having the Spirit of Christ and the Word of Christ direct me and animate me and energize me. That's what I'm for. And His energy and His Spirit and His Word sends me out into the world and gives me the ability to love and to meaningfully help others. That's what I'd like to be known by. And that's what I hope will be increasingly known by. Not St. Giles Kingsway is against this and that. And we might be against this and that. But we want to be known for what we're for. We want to make a difference. We want to shine the bright light of Christ's love in this world. May that be our great purpose as individuals, as families, and as a congregation, for the glory of Jesus Christ.